Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 114 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley. I'm a little croaky today. Alongside me is a man who's been in, of all places, Shrewsbury this weekend.
Absolutely.
David Cameron-Walker is here. Were you up there paying your respects to Graeme Turner?
I made a pilgrimage.
He's not died, by the way. No. He's still with us.
No, I wasn't. I was there visiting, you know, rather mundanely, visiting some old university friends who, of all places, managed to down tools and put their roots in Shrewsbury.
And what's the
much to my dismay when trying to book a bloody train ticket there.
Yeah, or come on to train ticket. What's the nighttime establishments of Shrewsbury like? Is there a Liquid? Is there a club icon?
I assume there are, but I didn't find them.
It's a shame.
I did end up in a particularly typical Wetherspoons-esque establishment.
Nothing wrong with that.
But it was fine. I had a lovely time.
And
can I ask one question to all Shrewsbury Town fans, residents of Shrewsbury?
The floor is yours,
sir. To this podcast. In the town centre, there are a couple of statues I saw. One of Charles Darwin. Brilliant. I know what he did.
Absolutely.
I know what he's all about. But there's another one.
Graeme Turner?
No, not Graeme Turner. Not yet.
Should be.
And it's just of a man just standing there proudly. And I went up to it to see what it was, and all it said on the thing, there was no plaque or anything, just Clive.
Brilliant.
What does he do? Who's Clive?
That's the title of the show right there. Who's Clive? It's not. But yeah, let us know if you're a Shrewsbury fan at Wanky Podcast. Who is Clive in Shrewsbury Town Centre? We'll find out next week. So the train journey there, I believe it kept you from finding out that the Watford were 2-0 up at Manchester City in the FA Cup.
Actually, it was nothing to do with the train journey. It's just being in the wilderness.
Your phone, isn't it?
No signal whatsoever. So I did get word that we were 2-0 up, but I wasn't quite sure how long it had gone, what was going on. I didn't know the team lineups or anything. I just knew the score, and I just said to my friends who I was with, come full time and we're back at home.
Well, we will
have lost this
game.
We'll
be discussing that with a Watford legend later in the show. More on that in a sec. First, though, speaking about train journeys, would have been the obvious time to listen to your audiobook, wouldn't it? If you'd have gone to audible.co.uk/going up. Get on there right now. You can get a free audiobook of your choosing and you get a free 1-month trial. All you need to do is go to this specific URL, audible.co.uk/going up, and click through via there. You get a whole month free. And you can cancel before the end of the month's end if you don't want to pay after that. Audible.co.uk/going up. No Carlo Jim this week. We should say happy birthday to Jim for over the weekend. Happy birthday to the big man. Leicester won again for him. We'll talk about them later. Graeme Turner, as we just mentioned, and Paul Ince as well have lost their jobs this week. Paul Ince was sacked by text. I'm not sure if Graeme Turner can even text, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. We'll also talk about Walsall and Oldham hitting 5 in League One, plus the FA Cup 4th round, which nearly did have its biggest shot. Courtesy of Watford 2-0 up at Manchester City before losing 4-2. The one and only Lufa Blissett, Watford's all-time top scorer, all-time top appearance maker, I believe, is going to be on later. He is one of the football ambassadors back in Prostate Cancer UK's Men United campaign, joining the fight against a disease which kills one man every hour in this country. So we'll speak to Lufa later. But first, we are going to start in League Two. This is a bit of an odd story. Chris Wilder has left the club, currently 6th in the division and chasing promotion, Oxford United, for the club bottom of the division, 6 points off safety and fighting to avoid relegation, Northampton Town. From the outside, it does seem one of the more curious managerial switches, especially when Wilder had been at Oxford for over 5 years working to get the club promoted to League One. Let's find out more about it right now. On the line, we've got David Pritchard, who is the chief sports reporter for the Oxford Mail, and Jefferson Lake, who is a football writer for the Northampton Chronicle and Echo. We've had both of them on the show before, and we thought we'd get them both on together to talk about a strange old few days. Jefferson, let's start with you and Northampton if we can. The club have been on the lookout for a new manager for quite a long time now. They've finally got their man, but it's taken a while.
Yeah, I added it up earlier. I think it's 36, 37 days since Eddie Boothroyd was sacked. December the 21st, he left. And obviously, with the Christmas period being pretty busy with fixtures, it feels like a bit longer than that because there's been a lot of games. So, yeah, it's dragged on a little while, but it's done now and sort of just in the nick of time, really, with the transfer window about to close on Friday.
David, I was watching the press conference earlier of Chris Wilder being unveiled as Northampton manager. And it was very interesting looking at it from an Oxford point of view when he was asked about his reasons for resigning and his reasons for swapping, you know, a club in Oxford who are right in the automatic promotion picture to the bottom of the Football League with Northampton Town. And he alluded to some personal reasons and the fact that he just felt like he needed a new challenge. He used the phrase that perhaps the car was driving itself at Oxford. Are you surprised by these comments?
Not really. I think there was a sense that perhaps, you know, he had been there for 5 years and there's always that risk that things could go a little stale. I think really the main reason, which, you know, he said all along, and as he said when he was linked with Portsmouth last month, is security. And, you know, to be offered a 3.5-year deal, I don't think there'll be many managers in the Football League who are on a longer deal than that. And, you know, with his, you know, he had no security at Oxford past May. I think there were several reasons, but I think that was possibly the most kind of pertinent one.
Do you think perhaps that, given that, as you said, his future was uncertain beyond the end of the season, given the fact that Oxford haven't, you know, managed to get promotion despite being in the picture of various levels over the last few years, do you think perhaps that he wasn't truly deep down confident that he could get this team over the line and anticipating that maybe would mean his time at the club would come to an end anyway?
Well, I think it was, you know, a bit the elephant in the room that if they didn't go up this season, I couldn't have foreseen him being offered a new deal. I think they're in a great position to make the top seven. I'm not sure if you're a betting man, you'd have them for automatic promotion, although it's very tight at the moment. So possibly he looked down the line and he wasn't 100% sure he would be in League One next season. So that possibly changed his thinking a little bit.
Jefferson, just to switch it back to Wilder going to Northampton, I'm a bit intrigued by the fact that they've obviously, he's done well in League Two without getting promoted, but he is a manager who's been promoted from the Conference.
Yeah.
Do you think they've bared that in mind, given the current league position that Northampton are in?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, although no one will say that publicly, I'm pretty sure that would be a factor, you know, a knowledge of that level and what it takes to get out of that level. I think today, you know, he did mention, when I spoke to him, about how difficult the Conference is to get out of as a league. And I think that will form a lot of his early conversations with the squad. You know, he'll stress to them just what a difficult and a tough league it is to play in and be successful in. And I think he will sort of openly challenge them to say, you know, do you really want to be a part of that? And perhaps use that as a motivational tool to the squad in the immediate future. But it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because he's kind of done well at both levels.
Jefferson, I'm sure Chris Wilder would perhaps optimistically be looking at it the other way, though. I mean, this is a club, Northampton, who last season were in a playoff final. They've been just as, you know, they've had just as many kind of near misses at promotion as Oxford have had over the last however many years. And I guess Wilder would see Northampton as possibly even a slightly bigger club than Oxford down the line. And if the 3.5-year deal, he'd have ambition to get Oxford up to the other end of the division and maybe further.
Yeah, well, I think the 3.5-year deal is a massive, that brings a massive level of security, doesn't it? He can treat it completely as a project once this difficult initial period has been overcome and he's kept them in the league. It's a funny one. I would always say that Oxford is a bigger club than Northampton, without a shadow of a doubt, really. I mean, you know, bigger fan base.
I imagine base. Dave might agree.
Yeah, well, I think, you look at attendances and things like that.
Yeah, but interestingly today he sort of said, the perception within football that Oxford always had a lot of money to spend, and he said he's always had tight budgets there. Dave will probably know more about that than I would, but I think Northampton have spent a lot of money this season. I think they've got the fifth highest budget in the division, and obviously are 24th in the division, so they've massively underperformed.
But it's kind of, you know, it must be depressing to be a Northampton fan this season, because you're back to square one again. You know, when Eddie Boothroyd came in after Gary Johnson's disastrous spell at the club, it was exactly this sort of position. Boothroyd managed to save them, gets them into the playoffs the next season, and then out of nowhere this season, it just all the bottom falls out and it all goes horribly wrong again. And you know, how are Northampton going to move forward and get some stability so in 18 months' time they don't find themselves in the same position Wilder's gone and someone's having to come in and save them from relegation again?
Well, so it's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, on, you know, on the CVs, the past two managers have appointed Eddie Goodwin and Gary Johnson, you'd say excellent choices. And again, with Wilder, you know, all three of those managers, their appointments have gone down superbly with the fans. Probably of the three, Wilder's the least superbly, I would say, funnily enough. But, you know, they've done everything they can, really, to get the right men in charge, and it's just not really worked. You're dead right when you say the season's been massively depressing, especially after, you know, what happened last year, where everyone thought they would just kick on and build on that playoff final, and it's gone the other way. So, yeah, in terms of avoiding history repeating itself, I really don't know. I mean, I think they've got, hopefully, the new guy will be a good pair of hands. You know, there's money to spend, and he'll be given time to do a job. Perhaps it needs to be stressed to the fans that we want to see this guy see out his three-year contract. I think it was 5 years at Oxford, 5 years at Halifax before that. So he's someone that does spend long periods at clubs. And I think if they stress from the start that this is going to be a long-term arrangement, then perhaps people will have a bit more patience maybe if it doesn't go too well in the initial stages, and they'll be able to ride out, you know, various storms at various points. But yeah, it's an interesting one. If the board had the answer, I'm sure they would have put it into action by now.
It's also interesting that he's appointed Alan Neil as his assistant at Northampton. Now, when Alan Neil took over at Michael Berry about 5 years ago, he brought in Chris Wilder as his assistant initially before Wilder left to go to Oxford. But if you're a Northampton fan, and like you just said, it's probably the least of those three, the least sort of most enthusiastic they've been about any of those candidates, to see the assistant being the manager of the other team in the relegation zone can't be that inspiring either.
No, that's a strange one, really. I don't really know the full story of what happened at Torquay, but I mean, he's been reasonably successful in other places. I suppose when you're an assistant, it's completely different to being the main manager. He was at the game on Saturday, so he will have probably a better knowledge of the squad than Wilder himself at this point. Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? Because you're basically getting two managers there for one. You know, so he only left Torquay sort of the back end of last month. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that dynamic works, definitely.
Some might say you're only getting one and a half managers. But
David. Well, Alan Neil's a very big lad, so I mean, he'll almost maybe get two and a half managers.
Although in Neil's defence, I have seen some things recently from him saying he prefers the coaching side of managing to all the rest of it, the transfer dealings, the running of the club. So maybe this will be a better fit for him. But David, just to bring it back over to Oxford, Oxford are now without a manager, but usually when you're without a manager it's because you're failing, because you're at the bottom of the league, you're within threat of relegation. But Oxford, as we've mentioned, are right up the top of the league, sixth at the moment, game in hand, but it's so tight up there, automatic promotion is very much on the table as it stands. Where do Oxford go from here? What sort of person do they need to appoint? Is it a continuity to keep things ticking over, or is someone from the outside going to come in and try and push them on?
Well, for the moment, Mickey Lewis, who was Wilder's assistant, is in charge, caretaker charge. Amid all the sort of confusion that was Saturday night, the chairman did speak at length about...
Sorry to interrupt, but can you talk us through that? Because, this probably needs explaining for anyone who hasn't really closely followed the story of this move.
So, well, it was an extraordinary few hours, really.
So, Oxford beat Torquay 1-0 on Saturday with Chris Wilder in charge.
Yes. The day before, Thursday, it's Jefferson's fault, really, because they broke a story saying that Northampton had approached a fellow League Two club. And once Justin Edinburgh made it clear it wasn't them, Chris Wilder was an obvious target. We found out that it was Oxford who were the target, and... on Friday, he declined interviews and put up Mickey Lewis to do the press. It was clear something was going on behind the scenes, but nothing happened until after the game Saturday, when all we knew standing in the tunnel was Mickey Lewis had come out and had sort of batted away, you know, questions about what was going on. We hung around for about an hour, and then the chairman came out and said that it was his understanding Chris Wilder had resigned, but he didn't have a resignation letter. But he sort of gave quite a lengthy press conference, sort of saying that Mickey Lewis had been appointed caretaker and this is the options next, only for us to drive home to find Chris Wilder releasing a statement saying he hadn't in fact resigned, at which point most Oxford fans' sort of brains melted. And then there was a long, long sort of day on Sunday where there was a lot of sort of background negotiations and things, and finally at 10 o'clock Sunday night it became clear that Chris had resigned and they'd agreed compensation. But I mean, it was an absolute sort of mess Saturday night, and it did look like it could be heading for sort of quite a nasty legal battle. So I think we can all be grateful that that has been avoided, because I don't think that would have benefited either party.
But going forward, in terms of the next manager then?
Yeah, so for the moment, Mickey's in charge, and
Do you think he'd be a realistic candidate to get it to the end of the season?
One of the options Ian Lenigan said after Saturday was they would look at the potential of an interim manager until the end of the season, and then they'd sort of assess in the summer. And one option is Mickey Lewis as a caretaker. I think it all depends on how the next couple of weeks go. They have a lot of games coming up, and I think United will want to do this correctly, to do this properly with a sort of full interview process. So I think Mickey Lewis will have four or five games at least, and if they continue, you know, and the games they've got coming up, there is the potential for a decent run. If that happens, I think it will be very tempting to keep him in charge till the end of the season, and then they'll see what happens. But as you say, it's quite an unusual position for a team to be managerless in, so I think it will attract quite a good calibre of applicant, probably more so than if Chris Wilder had left at the end of the season having missed out on promotion, and they were just sort of another League Two contender.
Jefferson, I just want to pick up on something you said earlier, that Chris Wilder will have some funds available to strengthen and to bring in some of his own players. Made that cause some raised eyebrows in the Boothroyd household, considering that in the summer you lost to several of your best players from last season due to, I believe, the need to get the wage bill down, correct me if I'm wrong, and even though there were some loan players that came in the loan window this season, the squad was weakened from last year, and yet a new manager comes in and gets the opportunity to strengthen. Surely the old manager would have a bit of a cause for concern over that.
Yeah, I mean, the budget was reduced between the seasons, but not hugely. Some top earners left. Akinfenwa left, Clark Carlisle, you know, players like that who were on good contracts. So it wasn't a huge reduction. And Boothroyd always said he wanted a small, tight squad of quality instead of quantity. What then happened was that they had about 18 or 20 senior pros, and about four or five of them got injured. So then he had to keep bringing, obviously, and then he bringing loan players. So lots of loan players came in, and the squad became a bit bloated at that point. So he did actually sort of spend a fair bit. I think he was quite reluctant to really, really spend. I think there was more funds available if he wanted them. And now at this point, they're sort of it's going to be a lot sort of more financially prudent to spend the money on players now than get relegated and lose all kinds of funding and you know, prestige and stuff. So I think I don't know what Eddie Boothroyd will think about that, but they definitely need to. Finance a few signings, definitely.
Can I just say one of the best things about this, by the way, is that if you see how tight this division is and how close it is, the race for promotion, how close it is down at the bottom, the last day of the season, if you think about it, Northampton could be fighting to stay up on the last day. Oxford could need a win to go up. And this is just the way football works. The last day of the season, May the 3rd, 3 o'clock, Northampton versus Oxford United.
Brilliant.
Would you believe it?
And someone even said, imagine, although I just think this is hugely unlikely, imagine if Eddie Boothroyd got the Oxford job. He was the one who was responsible for Northampton's relegation, ultimately, which would be an incredible Hollywood-type storyline, but unlikely, I think.
And so, guys, what do you think of the chances of your both teams? We'll come to David first. What do you think of the chances of Oxford doing it finally and getting up into League One?
I think they have an excellent chance finishing the top seven. I think they will need to overachieve between now and May to get into the top three, and potentially spend a bit of money to get in a bit of quality up front, because I think the likes of, you know, Scunthorpe and Chesterfield have a bit more than them at the moment. Once you're in the playoffs, who knows? But yeah, I think this is their best chance of the four seasons they've been back.
Okay, and Jefferson, what about Northampton? 6 points off safety at the moment. Can they turn that round under the new manager?
It's a huge ask. I mean,
the point is there's sort of 20 games left, I think, now. So there's plenty of games to go. But the problem is there's only, what, 3 or 4 days left of the transfer window. They need to sign players at least until the end of the season. They can't go in with loan players. Well, when they got relegated from League One in 2009, I think it was, they were awash with loan players, and there was a perception that those loan players didn't care, and they all went back to their Championship or Premier League level clubs at the end of their loans, and Northampton got relegated. So they really can't afford to go down the road of the loan players. It's going to be crucial what happens in the next few days. That will give them, in theory, if they get the right players, and they'll have the squad to compete over the remaining 20 games. But the next few days is absolutely vital. I think the manager they've got in is the best they could have got. So that's a major positive. But the squad needs a lot of work. I mean, you could make the case that they need 7 or 8 new players in the first 11 quite easily on the basis of the last few games. So it's going to be, I think it'll go right to the wire. It might even go to the Oxford game. But I think
it's inevitable.
Probably just about do it.
Okay. Nice to talk to you guys. Thanks very much for coming on, both of you. Go and have a rest. I know you've had a busy few days. That is David Pritchard, Chief Sports Reporter for the Oxford Mail, and Jefferson Lake, football writer for the Northampton Chronicle and Echo. Next, something slightly different, as we're joined by a Football League legend and a man who scored over 200 career goals. So, prostate cancer kills one man every single hour in the UK, and unbelievably, 10,000 each year. This season, as the official charity partner of the Football League, Prostate Cancer UK have been asking fans to put aside their differences and become men united in the fight against the disease. Firstly, to get the message out there. Secondly, to support those men affected by it. And thirdly, to raise funds to find more reliable tests and treatments for the future. Men United is about men standing together from the terraces to the pub and beyond to say that, quite simply, men deserve better. You might have seen the new TV advert which premiered during the Bournemouth-Liverpool game. It was on ITV on Saturday, starring Bill Bailey, filmed down at the New Den. Bill is among a number of well-known figures to be backing this campaign, alongside the likes of rugby legend Will Carling. You've got Damian Lewis, aka Brody in Homeland. You've got Game of Thrones hardman Charles Dance and Michael Parkinson. And there's a whole host of ex-players who are all football ambassadors for Prostate Cancer UK as well. And one of them is the former England, AC Milan, Watford and Bournemouth striker Lufa Blissett. And we are very pleased to say that Lufa joins us on the show right now. Lufa, pleasure to talk to you. Can we start by asking you a bit more about your involvement with Prostate Cancer UK, first of all, because I know you've been involved with them for quite a few years.
Yes, that's right. First sort of joined the campaign when they partnered with the Football League a year or so ago. And, you know, I was asked if I'd be an ambassador for it. And, you know, when I heard the statistics, and I think like so many people, when you hear them for the first time, you are shocked and horrified by it. And, you know, I thought I could, whatever I can do to help, to raise the awareness and get men starting to think seriously about their health, you know, it'd be worth doing.
And those statistics are indeed quite horrific, aren't they? 1 in 8 men will develop prostate cancer at some point in their lives. And that increases actually to 1 in 4 when you're talking about black men, which is astonishingly high.
It is. It's incredible. You know, and as yet, they don't know the exact reason why that is. So research is very much needed. But in the meantime, we just need to get all the myths and all these scary things that men are, you know, or ignorance more than anything else, get rid of the ignorance that we all have about, you know, these sort of diseases and the way these tests are done. And really, you know, it's about saving your life. And if you're going to be uncomfortable for 10 minutes through an inspection or whatever, that sort of thing, it shows, you know, it's well worth it. Because at the end of the day, if it saves your life, it's 10 minutes well spent.
As Mark said, you've been involved in this campaign and also many other charitable causes for many years throughout your career. And how powerful do you think football can be in helping reach men in issues like this? Do you think it really does make a genuine difference?
It makes a huge difference. The thing is, I mean, football supporters will chat about football all day. So if we can introduce this into the equation when they're talking about football, because there's it's made around football and they will sign up to become, you know, part of Men United. And I believe we've got in the region of already in excess of more than 15,000 people or whatever already. Mm. We've only been going about 5 days. So it shows that the word is getting out there and people are taking it on board. So that is absolutely fantastic news. So football is great for that, because you talk about football and you talk about this, which is something that men, you know, that's not something we're very good at. And all being well, with the link with the football and the fact also that Millwall obviously now wear it on their shirts, and you begin to see it more and more, and people are not looking at it as that scary word quite so much as it once was. So just like what the ladies have done, hopefully we'll look at it in the same way, and we'll start to make sure we get examinations and look at ourselves, and all being well, you know, we can end up saving quite a few lives, which is really what this is all about.
So, yeah, menunited.prostatecanceruk.org is the website. You can take the test there and see how much you know. And, Luther, you're actually doing another big charity cycle. I know you did one last year, didn't you? London to Amsterdam. And you're doing one just before the World Cup again this summer.
Yeah, we leave on Friday the 6th of June from Lake Norrins Ground, actually. We're riding from there this time and going to the Amsterdam Arena, which we're hoping to get there sometime on the Saturday. So,
and how was that? How was that last year? Did it all go well?
It was great fun. It was absolutely brilliant fun. The usual things, you had punches and bikes breaking and all sorts of stuff as you go down there, you know, one of the, but it's all part of it. And it was really well supported. All the guys that came along it and girls that came along it, it was an absolutely fantastic ride. And I think we've already more than doubled the numbers from last year. So I think it shows that people are, you know, beginning to get on board, and it's hopefully going to be proved to be very successful, and you know, the numbers can keep growing from year to year, because we do have a lot of fun, and you know, the camaraderie while we're going along, and you know, that sort of thing is very, very good. And yeah, it's hard work the first day, because you need to cover about 90 odd miles up on the first day, but the next day is quite easy because it's flat in Holland, and that is fantastic.
what sort of nick are you in, Luther? You're at the front of the pack, or are you hiding right at the back of the peloton?
Oh no, you won't find me near the front. I'll tell you what, look, last year there was a group of lads and they were absolutely amazing. They left Wembley Stadium and we never saw them again until we got to Harrods, and they got there around about 1 o'clock.
I reckon they got the train
on a Sunday afternoon, you know, because we stopped for lunch and other stops all the way. But they didn't stop. They just gunned it all the way there. I mean, they absolutely ripped it, you know. So because those boys are serious, and I mean, hopefully they'll be doing it again. And I'm sure they'll try and beat the record they did last year. So there's all these little things going on. Yes, we want to get as many people there together. But if you're one of these that just want to get your head down and do it as quick as possible, you know, you do it, because not everybody's going to do that. It's all different abilities. And the idea is hopefully, you know, we get the majority of people arrive at the same time.
Well, yeah, it'd be great to get as many representatives of all the different clubs, sort of fan-wise, so we can get this summer. So that is prostatecanceruk.org/Amsterdam if you want to find out more and sign up for the big cycle this summer. Now, DC, obviously you're a big Watt fan. I'm sure you've got some questions for Luther, who was at the Etihad on Saturday, which you weren't.
No, unfortunately, I wasn't there. And I mean, I'm like most football fans and Watford fans, perhaps we had a little bit more hope than most of the public gave us, but I certainly didn't expect to find ourselves 2-0 up at half time. And what a fantastic first half performance from Watford.
It was, you know, I stood there and the boys came out and they got on with the game, and you got almost from the kickoff this feeling that perhaps the Manchester City players thought, we've got Dzeko and we've got Aguero up front, you know, it's just a matter of time before we get a goal. We haven't really got to go too hard at this. And, you know, they never really got going. They never really settled. And, you know, the credit to our players, they took the game straight to them, you know, and went straight for the heart of them all the time. And very early on, we had a chance of scoring, which we didn't take. And, you know, then finally a super little 1-2, which was Troy slipped the ball around the corner and Fernando ran onto it and, you know, put it away. And it was 1-0. You know, absolutely amazing noise from the Watford supporters at the other end. I mean, absolutely incredible. All the way through the game, again, just like last year, they were phenomenal supporters all the way through. And then when the second one went in, you know, it was like, goodness me, someone pinch just wake me up. Because this is Man City, the team that absolutely annihilates everybody that comes here. You know, we more than held our own first half, did really, really well. And, you know, missed one or two other little half chances, which we probably could have done a little bit better off. Because I think if we'd gone in 3-0, I think the tie would have been over. Definitely would have been over if we'd gone in a 3-0. You know, but I said to one or two people around us, you'll make two changes at half time, definitely, and then you'll probably make a third one 10-15 minutes into the game, which is exactly what he did. But Company coming on made all the difference. He just gave them that reassurance at the back. So the back door's now locked, lads, so come on, let's go and play their stuff. And, you know, Aguero has been a threat pretty much all through the game. You know, he got going and nicked the first goal, scored a super second goal, and, you know, was there at the back post ahead in the third. So It just wasn't meant to be at the end of the day. But the lads, first half especially, were fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
Not a bad substitute to bring on, is it? Vincent Kompany. But it was, you know, even though the final score was 4-2, so close to getting the replay, and you know, I really felt for Jonathan Bond, who's been, you know, a really promising start to his Watford career, playing some games last season and getting in the team a bit more this season as well, and you know, let that one through his legs from Kolarov.
Yeah, I mean, we see that, you know, when you say you know, that sort of thing happens with experienced goalkeepers. You know, everybody makes a mistake at some stage. Unfortunately, when a goalkeeper makes one, the ball usually ends up in the back of the net, where outfield players and whatever we tend to make mistakes more frequent than goalkeepers do. So it's you know, he had a good game. He did what he had to do, and really all the goals apart from that one, you know, he had nothing he could do about all the other goals. So you know, yes, he's got to be proud of what he's done. He'll be disappointed with that when he let it, but you know, because that's just easy. You know, he is a very good professional, and he's very proud about, you know, being a goalkeeper. And you know, goalkeepers never like to see the ball go by him. So I've got no problem with him at all, and I'd stick him in goal any time because I think he's a good goalkeeper.
Lisa, how would you sum up the season from a Watford perspective this year? Because obviously so close to the Premier League with the playoff final at Wembley, it's not really quite been the same story so far this year, has it?
No, it hasn't. You know, I mean, we started the season well enough. You know, there didn't seem to be too much of a hangover from the disappointment of last season, and we started not too bad. But then, you know, we just had one or two injuries. I think the squad proved not to be strong enough because we didn't have enough bodies in to play in crucial areas, especially when we lost the likes of Troy. And, you know, we lost Anya, we lost Abdi at a time when the team just wasn't able to cope with it. And I think that's what really set us back the way it did. And, you know, obviously what ended up with that was Gianfranco leaving, which, you know, was a bit of a shame because what he had actually created at the time he was there was something quite special. And every now and then you see flashes of it coming back. So that was a bit sad in itself. But the fact that we had that period where it just didn't quite go well, we just haven't quite then been able to rekindle that confidence, that belief, you know, that we played with last year. So we've, you know, they're earning that now. But, you know, Pepe's come in and he's been amazing, very entertaining on the touchline. You can see the traits of, you know, the Italian, get the defence sorted first, and then we think about going forward, you know, and we look more organised at the back, we look stronger, more solid, you know, and I think we've just got to hopefully now start to get that confidence from that. You know, I mean, Man City are anything to go by. If you believe the back is shut and bolted, I think you can relax and play your stuff more when you go forward, which I'm hoping is going to be the case for us from here on in.
And I think, yeah, you're certainly right in terms of Sininho's coming in, and the defence has looked a lot more solid. We've drawn quite a few games, obviously like to win a few more, but we look a lot harder to beat. I mean, last season we were fantastic going forward, and you know, there were games where we'd win 3-2 and we'd outscore the opposition despite our defensive frailties at times, whereas this season we weren't scoring enough goals, and those goals were still going in at the wrong end for us. So he sorted out the defence and just needs to start working on the forward play now.
Yeah, we do. But, you know, we must never forget that we had, you know, influential players last year that helped us to have that real threat going forward.
Yeah.
Who were no longer in as part of the club. You know, you had Vidra, for one thing, Matthias Vidra at the front. He was that one, very direct, very quick, and all he saw was goal, a chance to shoot, chance to get on the end of things. And he was the one that looked to break the back line of the opposition at every opportunity. And that gave you an extra string to your bow. We had Nathaniel Chalabar in midfield, who was the one, good playmaker, moved the ball quickly, slowed the game down, you know, ran the game a little bit by the way he played. Big loss in there this season, not been there to do that. And then Almin Abdi, when he got injured early on, you know, without him, he was the one, a lot of the work he does is unseen, but, you know, it was well rewarded last year by having given him player of the season. But he does things, but he just arrives in the right place where he needs to be, especially when you're going forward mainly, and he's always in the right place to pick that ball up and set the attack going or get on the end of it himself. And, you know, we've really been lacking one, those sort of crucial three players mainly this season. That's where we've been a bit short, and really it's in the firepower side of the team.
And just finally, Luther, a lot of people, outsiders looking in at Watford since the takeover last summer, have had various opinions on whether it's a good thing for the club, whether it's a good thing for English football with all the loan players and the dealings with Udinese and Granada and the Pozzo family. And, you know, we're nearly 2 years into it now. We're into our second manager, into the second season. How do you look at the whole thing in terms of Watford's future? Do you think it's a good thing for the club? And, you know, are we in good hands? Are we in a good position going forward? And do you think Watford are still, you know, do they still represent everything that we love about Watford in terms of the young players and the spirit and of a family club?
I think you look at football in general, and especially clubs that now have owners, you know, foreign owners, they have a different philosophy to where they want to play the game and the way they want to run the entire thing. So, you know, we were at a period of time, especially the 80s and tonight, where the club was very successful, and, you know, it was a different club, it was a different time, priorities were so much different. When you have a Premier League which has the sort of money washing around in it as there is, everyone's focus is on getting in the Premier League, and they sort of almost look beyond all the other things, and it's only that end goal is what people are looking at. And you know, Watford at the moment is, in that respect, aren't greatly different to many other clubs. You know, they're looking at, if we can get the Premier League, we can do this, means we can upgrade the stadium, we can get better players, we can do this and the other, because it's a means to an end. But getting there is very, very difficult. And I think that the way that we're doing at the moment, yes, we would love to see more young players coming through, but, you know, how many are you really going to get? Even if you look through the time we've been there, you know, we get maybe one per season. One a season is not going to be enough to get you where you want to go. So you're always going to have to look to buy players and bring them in. So, you know, the way of doing it is to get in almost ready-made players from Udinese or from Granada or that sort of thing. That bridges a gap, while hopefully through your academies and whatever, you know, you can develop and bring one or two more players through. So it's one of those double-edged swords things, you know. If you want to be where you want to be, then, you know, there are sacrifices, if that's the right word for it, to be made. And we have to accept that it's been done slightly differently. And as long as the club as a entity is not at risk, which I believe there's no way it is that way with these people, they have, you know, they have come in and they are not risking the club's existence at all in what they're doing. So, you know, I think that is the most important thing, I think, is that the club's existence is not in any danger. It's not where you're spending beyond your means on the club. If something was to happen, we'd go out of business, because that would just be dreadful, and you can end up in a position like a Portsmouth or something like that. So I think we've just got, as long as, you know, we've got success, we've got the club, and we've got young players coming through our academy system still, then, you know, it's the modern club, it's the new Watford Football Club that we've now got. And, you know, we should be thankful that we don't have the money worries and that sort of thing that so many clubs do have, which I think is very good for us.
Definitely. Lee, thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure.
To talk to you. Best of luck with the cycle this summer as well. Hope it goes well.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, start training another month, so we'll see.
Don those Lycra shorts. Thanks, mate. That's the former England, AC Milan and Watford striker, Lou Fabbrizi. He was a football ambassador for Prostate Cancer UK. A reminder to get yourself over then to menunited.prostatecanceruk.org. Take the test there, see how much you know about one of the UK's biggest man killers, and join Men United. There's also a confidential helpline you can call as well if you've got any concerns about prostate cancer. That's 0800 074 83 83. Right now, though, it's time for My Club, the bit of the show where we give Football League fans 125 seconds to tell us all about their side, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And today, the focus is on Sheffield United.
This is We Are Going Up, My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name's Ian Parks and my club is Sheffield United.
So, Ian, do you remember your first ever visit to Bramall Lane?
Very vaguely. I believe it was Wigan at home in the old 4th Division, about 1988, roughly. Surprisingly, I can't remember a lot about it, but I know we lost.
I was going to say, probably one of the worst memories you've got is at home to Wigan, isn't it?
Probably the worst memory, actually. I don't think there's many that come much worse than that one.
Which brings me on to my next question. Ian, if I was to give you...
Is it about Tevez? If it is, we've got there within 15 seconds.
Well, I'm going to give you the opportunity, right? You're allowed to extinguish either Carlos Tevez or Graham Pohl from human existence. And they were never around. So which one would you take?
Comfortably Carlos Tevez.
There you go. I thought you might get a mention in this somehow.
Not that bitter.
Let's go the other way then. Talk about your best times as a Sheffield United fan. I'm sure you've seen plenty of promotions in the Premier League, of course. What's your best memory as a Blade?
I think the whole year in the Premier League last time, in the 2006-2007, was great up until the Wigan game, basically. I suppose it was a one-off game. We've had a couple of good ones, but one that'll stick out for a lot of United fans of my sort of era is the game we beat Nottingham Forest in the playoffs in 2003 to get to Wembley.
Yes, that was a brilliant game. Yeah, I remember watching
it. Paul Pesci-Flido scored late on and Steve Cabba scored. And as a United fan, I think the best part about the game was Des Walker scoring an own goal, which did certainly help.
You're not a fan of Steve Cabba, DC?
I'm not a fan of Steve Cabba, absolutely not. We signed him, I think, in the Premier League season from Sheffield United. He was terrible.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, because he barely played for us and I couldn't believe you'd bought him.
So, what is your... Let me think, if you can think back through your long history of being a Sheffield United fan, what's your favourite goal?
I think the Pesci-Flido one in that game against Forest can't be far off. Other than that, Michael Brown scored a good one against Wednesday at Bramall Lane. I think an Adi Akinbayi and Michael Tong double at Hillsborough probably comes quite close in the year we went up as well in 2006-2007.
Do you remember that when Michael Brown used to be a good footballer?
I know. He still picked up about 20 yellow cards a season, but he also scored 20 goals, which helped.
Ian, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
No problem at all.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
So we'll have another one of those on the show next week. Right now, though, it is time to start our weekend review, and we will start in the Championship. Only 4 games at the weekend, but Leicester took the opportunity with all their rivals not playing to move 8 points clear at the top, and they've equaled a club record of 7 straight wins with that victory over Middlesbrough. DC.
Yeah, slightly questionable. Very good. First goal.
Yeah.
We had a look on the replay a couple of times, didn't we? At first sight, I could have sworn that went out of play on the touchline with David Nugent pulling it back for Vardy. But then if you look and slow it down, it is incredibly close. The linesman is on the opposite side. I don't know where the referee was positioned. So, you know, you can forgive the officials for letting the game play on. And they took advantage, and it was Vardy at the heart of it again, wasn't he?
Absolutely. Now, here's a stat for you. How many penalties do you think Leicester have been awarded this season?
Quite a lot, I imagine.
Nugent missed another on Saturday. They've been awarded 13 penalties this season. Sheffield Wednesday have had 3 penalties in the last 37 months.
Jesus.
So I don't know what that... I mean, obviously it's not a refereeing thing. It's just the fact that Leicester have got so many quick players in and around the penalty area.
Absolutely, yeah. When you've got Lloyd Dyer, the likes of Lloyd Dyer, Jamie Vardy flying through, they are going to get brought down.
Another goal for you at the weekend.
Yep.
For Derby, Patrick Bamford.
Living vicariously through Patrick Bamford. Enjoying
beautiful left-footed finish. They've now picked up Derby 37 out of 51 points under Steve McLaren, which is obviously excellent. Ipswich beating Reading by 2-0, their first win since last year. Boxing Day, I think. And Blackpool 1-1. First game in charge this for Barry Ferguson and caretaker charge because Paul Ince has finally gone. We thought he might have gone by the time we did the show last week, but he's definitely gone now, sacked by text apparently as well. The right decision, do you think, from what you read from Blackpool fans?
Yeah, I'm making the point that maybe they could have tried harder to get rid of Tom Ince in the summer, as maybe as confusing as that would be on the surface, just to get the money in that they would have been able to get for him last summer. Would have been a lot more than they can now, obviously, because he's only got 6 months left in his contract, and they could have strengthened the squad, perhaps. I think the squad is small, and they had a good start, but once the suspensions and the disciplinary problems kicked in, coupled with the customary odd injury that you're always going to get here and there, they struggle, and you can't rely on Tom Ince just to bail you out all the time. He's performed well enough this season, but, you know, like last year, I think it was 16 goals and 14 assists, I think something like that, you know, completely carried the team, and it's a big ask to ask him to do it again.
Rumours he might be going to Swansea on loan.
Yeah, well, it looks like, yeah.
Before Friday.
I think what they're doing, I mean, he's out of contract in the summer, and it is rumoured that many clubs, you know, Premier League clubs, one in Monaco, you know, could offer him a huge deal, you know, largely tax-free wedge over there in a lovely lifestyle in Monaco. You wouldn't say no, would you?
Well, they've lost Thingy as well.
Falcao. Yeah, there you go.
First and last time you'll ever hear them two mentioned in the same sentence.
Well, you never know. But, you know, so I think they're going to get some money from him, though, now. They'll get a loan fee, I think, from now to the end of the season. Swansea looks like the one he's going to. I think Palace are interested as well. There'll be, you know, no shortage of suitors for his signature. And it's about using what little money they do get to try and rebuild the squad and give them a chance of pushing on and making sure they don't get sucked down into League One. Mm. And going back to the original question, was it the right decision to get rid of Paul Ince? I think on balance it was, because I've never been that impressed with him really over the last few years. As I've said many times, he did make a great start to his managerial career, worked wonders, you know, at Macclesfield really. They were dead and buried when he came in, did very good in his first spell at MK Dons. And ever since then, he just hasn't impressed me. And, you know, from all accounts, from what you hear from the chairman saying, he doesn't seem to be a very hands-on manager. He wasn't there on the day. I mean, in his defence, he said he was a coaching course. Yeah. But, you know, and he says that the chairman asked for a list of players who they wanted to sign in January. None was given. So you don't know whether that's true or not. No. It's one man's word against another at this stage. But I'm not surprised that he's gone. And he was surprised that he was sacked. And I don't necessarily think he should have been.
OK, we'll move down into League One. Brentford won on Friday night when they beat Gillingham by 2-1. Marcelo Trotta scoring a penalty at that end. Mm-hmm. Put it away perfectly. You've only done that last season, Marcelo. But yeah, another good win for Mark Warburton. 7 wins and a draw now from his 8 games in charge. But that isn't... Well, that wasn't the result of the League One weekend, because, well, there was two of them, really. We'll do Walsall first. They won 5-1 away at Notts County, their biggest away win in 17 years. A first-half hat-trick from Fabian Brandy. They're into the playoffs.
Speaking of penalties,
they're into the
we're watching Scunthorpe Fleetwood live as we record
well,
this.
Well, you are. I'm reading off my script, but yeah.
And Fleetwood have just missed a penalty.
Is that Schumacher as well? Oh, he never misses pens. We'll come on to League Two in a second. But yeah, Walsall, we gave him a little bit of a mention last week. 5-1 win at Notts County, and just when things were looking great for Sean Derry, they've lost twice in a week.
Yeah, but I think some good news for Notts County fans, despite losing 5-1 to Walsall, their goal scorer on the day, Callum McGregor, has returned to the club on loan from Celtic. There was talk of maybe him leaving, and other clubs were interested in buying him from Celtic, but he's come back to Notts County, so that's a huge boost for them, because he's been good for them so far.
What about Walsall, though? Can they get promoted, do you reckon?
Well, absolutely. If they keep up the form from Saturday, they can. A hat-trick for Fabian Brandy. They find themselves 6 at the moment. I mean, you've got Peterborough imploding around them. And then there's a little bit of a gap there backwards to Swindon, who are doing okay. Port Vale, MK Dons, Coventry behind them. So they're in a decent position. Mm. I think of the top 6 clubs, you know, they're certainly the smallest in terms of budget by quite some distance. You know, with Brentford, Orient, Wolves, Preston, Rotherham, maybe Orient, maybe sort of similar level. But, you know, and they're right up there with Rotherham, level on points with Rotherham. So, you know, they've been up there the last few seasons. So I think they're doing fantastic to be in this position, and they've got good as chances as any of being in the playoffs.
Well, talking about Peterborough imploding, they won against Tranmere last week, and we were saying, right, you know, back to normality now. Then I think they were 3-0 down, were they, in no time against Notts County? I think they eventually won that game 4-3. I think there might have been a red card in that. And then 5-4 defeat at Oldham at the weekend, having been 3-0 up. Another red card for Lee Tomlin. His third in 14 games. And what's that? So 7 and 9, 16 goals in 2 games have been involved in.
Spectacular, really, isn't it? I mean, they had such a good start to the season. And things, as we've spoken about in recent weeks, despite getting a few victories, things are still all not well at that football club. I mean, I view my Peterborough through a few fans on Twitter, one being Adrian Durham, who's never short of an opinion, and has been scathing of the management of Darren Ferguson, and doesn't want him to leave, but just wants him to pull his socks up and do a lot better. And also John Verrill, who we've had on this podcast a number of times, a slightly more level-headed view of the world than Adrian Durham, but he has been, you know, certainly been angry as well this season, which I guess shows you perhaps just how badly things have gone over recent months. You know, they're still, you look at the league table and think, oh, well, they're 7th, they're still right in it, but they, you know, they're falling fast, and the momentum has long gone at that club, and you're losing a game 5-4 like that to Oldham. You know, you shouldn't be doing that. You've got to be professional and shut games out. Tomlin, you know, going into the season as their best player, arguably. Celtic were interested in him in the August transfer window. He stayed at the club, which was, at the time, you'd think a big boost. But he's got sent off 3 times this season. You know, he's a senior player. He needs to set a better example than that. He needs to be on the pitch for Peterborough and playing well to help them do better. And he's not been doing that of late.
Before we leave League Two, then, a quick word about Graeme Turner. After about 55 years, he's, whatever it is, he's gone. And we did that big profile, that big special on him a few weeks ago. Yeah. So go back in the archive if you want to find out more about his time at the club. But yeah, he's gone.
He's bowed out with typical
grace.
Dignity and grace, hasn't he? I think he's realised that
they're struggling.
That they are struggling. Perhaps they need a new voice in the changing room. They need an injection of a bit of fresh ideas and life into the club, and he's just not up to it at this time anymore. And, you know, no, there will be no Shrewsbury Town fan out there who, you know, will have a bad word to say about Graham.
Do you know who's in caretaker charge there at the moment? Graham. Yeah. Do you know who's in caretaker charge there at the moment?
No.
It's Michael Jackson.
Oh, really? Excellent. Yeah,
they brought him back from the dead to look after Shrewsbury Town. No more of that to say. League 2. Fleetwood won 4-2 at Burton on Saturday. They are playing away at Scunthorpe as we record right now, playing twice in 3 days. Looking down the scores, the pick of the games, though, just purely for the weather, which was, I mean, played havoc with every single pitch in the Football League at the weekend, was Dagenham 3, Scunthorpe 3. And they actually had to take the players off for 10 minutes near the end because the conditions were ridiculous. And I saw some vines and obviously the footage of Bianca Westwood on Soccer Saturday as well.
She had a nice time, didn't she?
She did. I just want to go home. Jeff was probably my favourite line in it all, but yeah, it's not easy to get games on in that bottom league when the weather's been as bad as it has as it was this weekend.
Not easy to get him on in the second tier for Charlton, but
that's
yeah,
true.
There were many watching the highlights of many games that looked, you know, there were some postponements and perhaps some that maybe even should have been called off. And I also got caught in bad weather at the weekend.
Oh yeah,
it was one of those moments.
This is our in-depth League 2 round,
yeah,
by the way.
We'll come back to it in a minute. I digress. Allow me to digress for a second.
I don't think we will go back to it. Not much more to say.
I wish maybe if there was CCTV footage out there in Shrewsbury Town Centre, I could get hold of it. But I wish I could have seen this moment again, because we're nowhere near Clive at this point. But the thunderstorm and lightning was coming down. It was starting to spit a little bit. The black clouds were gathering over the hills of Shropshire in the distance, and we could tell something bad was.
This sounds like the middle bit in Thriller, actually.
Bad was in the air, and then there was a huge thunderclap, and then it was just instinctively we just knew something was coming, and there was like a big sort of a snap sound, and then out of nowhere, just whoosh, hailstones like the size of golf balls just fell out of the sky, and within seconds, everyone on this little crowded shopping street just scattered. And into the nearest shop, like doorway, alleyway, pub, everything they could find. And there was about 8 of us, and we all went in opposite directions. Nobody
Brilliant.
Knew where anyone was. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Right, well, because this is the full programme in midweek, I'm just going to give you the top three. And in fact, this might even be out of date because of this game that's going on as we record. Anyway, Scunthorpe, Chesterfield and Fleetwood are the top three as things stand down at the bottom. As we mentioned with Jefferson earlier, Northampton 6 points from safety, and Torquay are second bottom. In the FA Cup then, quick roundup. I thought, I said it to you off air at the start, it was one of the most boring FA Cup weekends ever, because I think my stats are right. I think it was 12 games, was it? I'm desperately trying to, I've written this down somewhere. Maybe it was 9 games where Football League sides played Premier League opposition, and there was only 2 matches in which the Football League side didn't lose. So it wasn't a great weekend from that point of view. One of them was Sheffield United, Fulham, which was a draw, and the other was Wigan Palace, which wasn't even a shock, really, so...
Yeah, I mean, I fancied Sheffield United going into that one, and it wasn't too far off in the end.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
was it, were it not for Michael Doyle being sent off, perhaps they could have got
well,
over the line.
If you look at the draw for the fifth round last year, I think there was 2 games that went to replays as well, so it was 18 teams in it. There was, I think there was 11 non-Premier League teams. There was 10 Football League and Luton in the draw. This year, there's only 7 Football League teams.
But the draw's not been too bad, has it?
Well,
in that respect,
it
got some of the big boys have been drawn against each other.
That's true. And
we've definitely got a Football League team in the next round as
we
well,
do.
Haven't we? Yeah.
Sheffield Wednesday playing Charlton, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, Sheffield Wednesday playing Charlton. And yeah, Wigan are still in there. They're away at, he says off the top of his head, I've
Cardiff.
Not written this. That's right, yeah. They're away because we have got Football League representation in there. Brighton are still going. They're playing Hull. So there's a few teams in there. We'll maybe revisit this topic a bit more in mid-February when the fifth round comes around, as it were. Right, should we end this?
Just have a quick chat about Scunthorpe and Fleetwood as we watch.
Okay.
It. I've been the TV's behind you, so you've been concentrating hard on the podcast and Luther Blissett and Oxford Northampton. And I've been sort of watching this at the corner of my eye. Fleetwood seemed to have the better of the first half, and it was perhaps typical of teams at a lower level in that they have been playing quite well and they've been creating a lot of chances. But nearly every good chance they had in the first half was completely and utterly fluffed, because there was no technical quality at the end of the good crosses and the good moves to actually cause the keeper any problems. And they have just missed a penalty. Stephen Schumacher actually was a good save from the Scunthorpe keeper. Scunthorpe had one good chance in the first half, the striker Winnell. Is it Sam Winnell?
Yes.
A fantastic sort of similar kind of angle to Kasami's goal for Fulham earlier this season. That sort of Ambassan-esque volley from the corner of the box, just going over, tipped over by a Fleetwood keeper. So it's been a decent game, pretty even. 20 minutes left. 20 you know minutes left is, as we speak.
This is like a delayed match update. That match report when you're listening to this.
Big John Park in there, looking as big as ever.
Absolutely right.
Do you think that they've maybe the Fleetwood Town marketing people have taken into account their away colours this season and gone for black? It is slimming.
Just because of Big John.
Yeah.
It's maybe why. Right. That is it for the show this week. There is a full programme in midweek in the Championship. In fact, in League One and League Two. I've got Mansfield away. How about yourselves?
Well, we're playing on Thursday.
We're on
Sky away at Nottingham Forest.
Oh, you are. Oh,
which is strange. I don't think we ever played on a Thursday.
It's odd. Well,
midweek.
We've got two teams playing tonight as we record on Monday night. You played on Saturday, which is odd. Two games in 3 days. Obviously, just because
I'm annoyed, really, because I like going to Nottingham. It's one of my favourite grounds, a City ground, and I would fancy that on a Saturday.
Absolutely. So, anyway, full programme midweek, full programme next weekend in the Football League. And, we'll be back next week. If you, hopefully, I'll have got my voice properly back by this time next week. If you want to tweet us, it's at Waggy Podcast. The website is wearegoingup.co.uk. There's loads of new blogs which have gone up there this week, which are well worth having a read of. Is that grammatically correct? I think it is. You can also go to iTunes. Please rate and review us on there. Help bump us up the chart. And the SoundCloud page is soundcloud.com/WagyuPodcast. That's your lot for this week. Thank you, DC.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you, Luther.
Thank you, Luther.
Luther.
What a great man. Speak to you next week, everyone.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
1 the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.